Well, friends, we now go to chapter number 14 of Import-Export Management Regulatory Functions. And here basically we are looking at marine insurance. Now, tell me one thing. All of you must be having your own life insurance policies. Yes. You must be having a Mediclaim policy also. Yes. Mediclaim policy for different purposes. For hospitalization separate, for healthcare specific. Yes, you must be having. In the same way, as far as your import-export cargo is concerned, we have marine insurance of different kinds. But here, the specificity is that it has got to be for marine purposes, sea purposes only. And that is why they are known as marine insurance. Along with that, we will look at the various kinds of surveys which take place and then how to file a claim on the shipping company or to the insurance as far as damaged cargo is concerned. The marine insurance covers the loss or damage of ships. Yes, whole ships also is insured. Cargo, terminals, and any transportation by which property is transferred, acquired, or held between the points of origin and the final destination. And here we have got a specific contract, that is contract of marine insurance, which is an agreement whereby the insurer undertakes to indemnify the assured in the manner and to the extent agreed between losses incidental to marine adventure. Mark the word marine adventure. There is a marine adventure when any insurable property is exposed to maritime perils, that is perils which are consequent to the navigation of the sea. And this term, perils of the sea, refers only to accidents or casualties of the sea. And such kind of maritime perils can include fire, war perils, pirates, seizures, and jettisoning. That means in cases of rough weather, the captain has got powers to throw away certain cargo on board, throw away into the sea, jettison the cargo to safeguard the ship. There are basically four types of marine insurance. First one is the hull insurance, that covers the insurance of the vessel and all the equipments, that is furnitures and fittings, machinery, tools, fuels, etc., which are a part of the ship. The second one is the cargo insurance, which includes all the cargo or goods contained in the ship and also the personal belongings of the crew and passengers. And then comes the freight insurance. This provides protection against the loss of freight. If the ship is lost or the cargo is damaged or stolen, the shipping company loses the freight. And therefore, there is a freight insurance available also to the shipping company. Then there is a liability insurance. It is where the insurer undertakes to indemnify against the loss which the insured may suffer on account of liability to a third party caused by collision of the ship and other similar hazards. This is basically a third party liability insurance. The basic concept of any insurance is, as far as the contract of marine insurance is concerned, that is, the insured person must have an insurable interest at the time of the loss. The insurable interest means owner of the ship has an insurable interest as far as the ship is concerned. Yes. Owner of the cargo has insurable interest in the cargo. A creditor has got an insurable interest in the extent of his lien on the goods. The master and crew members of the ship have got insurable interest in respect of their wages. Mortgagor has insurable interest in the hull full value. And the mortgages has insurable interest in respect of any sum due to him. Insured has an insurable interest in the policy he takes. These are the different kind of insurable interest. Now there are different types of marine policies, just like you have got your own insurance policies of different natures. As far as marine policies are concerned also, there are different types of insurance policy. The first one is a voyage policy, that is a policy in which the subject matter is insured for a particular voyage irrespective of the time involved in it. And risk attaches only when the ship starts on the voyage. Then there is a time policy, that is a policy in which subject matter is insured for a definite period of time. And this policy would cover all the risks from perils of the sea for the stated period of time. Here, time policy cannot be for a period exceeding 1 year, but it may contain a continuation clause. Continuation clause means that if the voyage is not completed within the specified period, the risk shall be covered until the voyage is completed or till the arrival of the ship at the port of call. There is a mixed policy, that is a combination of voyage and time policies, and covers the risk during particular voyage for a specified period of time. Then there is a valued policy, that is a policy in which the value of the subject matter insured is agreed upon between the insurer and the insured, and it is specified in the policy itself. Or there may be an open or unvalued policy, which is a policy in which the value of the subject matter insured is not specified. It leaves the value of the loss to be subsequently ascertained as and when it is required. Normally, such open policies are taken out by large volume exporters. There is a floating policy that only mentions the amount for which the insurance is taken out and leaves the ship and other particulars to be given by subsequent declarations. These policies are very useful to merchants, that is importers, exporters, who regularly dispatch goods through ships. Then there is a wagering or honor policy, that is a policy in which the assured has an insurable interest and the underwriter is prepared to dispense with the insurable interest. Such policies are also known as PPI or policy proof of interest. When we look at the specific marine cargo insurance, this is insurance of property as it moves from place to place by aircraft and road and rail vehicles also. That is specifically marine cargo insurance. It insures the property against loss or damage arising from perils of sea or air, and subsequent land and inland waterways also. This also includes fire, war perils, pirates, thieves, capture, jettison, and washing overboard and other perils which may be designated to other means of transport like crashing, derailment, overturning of the truck. Property can mean raw material, components, goods or merchandise that is being conveyed from one place to another. Also, items of the insurer's own equipment can be insured. For example, machinery, office furniture, samples and engineers' tools and exhibition materials also. Cargo insurance meant for importers and exporters. Importers, exporters, why do they need cargo insurance? Because they are exposed to a number of financial risks if they do not insure their international shipments. Exporter, when he sells the goods overseas, he has the option of either selling the goods in terms that leave the insurance to be arranged by him or his buyer, or he can arrange an insurance that covers the entire voyage, but the benefit of which passes from him to his buyer when the insurable interest passes from him to the other buyer. Under certain terms of sale, like cost insurance and freight, CIF, the seller contracts to obtain at his own expense a cargo insurance that the buyer or any other person having an insurable interest in the goods as an importer, he shall be entitled to claim directly from the insurer and to provide the buyer with an insurance policy or certificate for that purpose. Assigning of a marine policy. When claims are paid to person which are named in the policy, so marine policy has to allow for ownership to change as the ownership of the goods change. Similarly, the certificate will be assigned usually on the reverse side of the policy holder, thus opening up or assigning the certificate to the benefit of the buyer. That means reverse side of the policy or the certificate has got to be signed by the shipper, stating that he is assigning the certificate to the buyer. It also acts as a document of title, enabling the holder of the original version to obtain settlement of the insurer's claim. Of course, buyers can proceed to receive settlement for loss or damage to the goods in transit also, as though he was the original party who has taken out the insurance policy. It gives him the necessary detail to apply the policy rate and to change the premium also. There are various types of marine damages like act, neglect or default of the master, mariner, pilot or the servants of the carrier in the navigation or the management of the ship. Fire, unless it is caused by the actual fault or priority or in permissivity of the carrier. Perils, danger and accidents of the sea or of other navigable waters. Act of God, act of war, act of public enemies. Arrest or restraint of princes, rulers or people or any other seizure under any legal process. Apart from them, there is a quarantine restriction. There are acts or omission of the shipper or owner of the goods, his agent or representative. Also due to strikes, lockouts, stoppages or restraint of labor from whatever cause, whether partial or general. Provided that nothing contained shall be constitute to relieve a carrier from responsibility from the carrier's own act. Carrier also has a liability. Then riots and civil commotions, saving or attempted to save life or property at sea. Wastage as far as bulk cargo is concerned, or weight, or any other loss or damage arising from inherent defect, quality, or vice of the goods. If the quality changes, quantity may have also a defect due to some drying process, etc. Insufficient packaging, insufficiency of marks and numbers, or inadequate marks and numbers. Then various types of latent defects which cannot be discovered by just observing the package. And of course, any other cause which may arise without the actual fault, and privacy of the carrier without the fault or neglect of the agent or service of the carrier. But the burden of proof shall be on the person claiming the benefit of this exception to show that neither the actual fault or privity of the carrier, nor the fault or neglect of the agents or servant of the carrier contributed to the loss or damage. Here, yes, the claimant has got to prove that they were not responsible directly. All risk insurance. This is one of the most common type of insurance policy. The all risks insurance policy protects the shipper against physical loss or damage to their cargo from external causes subject to policy terms and conditions. And such insurance relieves them from their financial exposure from physical loss, damage to their goods, while the goods are in transit. And it is not necessary to prove the carrier's liability. However, such type of policies do not cover all the losses possible in the course of an international shipments. There can be exclusions, and some of the exclusions can be improper packing, abandonment of cargo, rejection of goods by the customs, failure to pay or collect accounts, inherent vice, that is, if it is infected, or if the goods are used goods, or any loss which is caused by temperature or pressure of the aircraft, or any losses in the port city, if it is more than 15 days from the date discharge of the cargo, or inland losses more than 30 days after discharge of the cargo. Then again, in case of barge shipments, again, certain goods subject to an on-deck bill of lading. Nowadays, of course, on-deck is under Rotterdam rules allowed, and insurance policy is also allowed for such containerized cargo. Failure to notify air carrier of preliminary loss is timely. The timely aspect is obvious damage within 7 days, hidden damage within 14 days, and non-delivery of the cargo within 120 days. Within this period, the air carrier has got to be notified preliminary that there is a loss to the cargo, whether in part or in full. Normally, most of the large shippers, exporters or importers will always take out an open cargo all-risk policy. Here, they have a policy for a large amount covering all the shipments over a certain given period of time, maybe a year. It will automatically cover all approved shipments that the insurers are obliged to insure under the terms of the sale. This will eliminate the need for importer or exporter to negotiate terms and conditions, rates and limits for each shipment separately. No, once the terms and conditions have been agreed, they are set on the open cargo orders policy. The importer-exporter has only to intimate the insurance company by various means regarding the movement of the goods via certain vessels or airlines. This is one of the broadest forms of the coverage, since it ensures the approved goods in the event of physical loss or damage from any external causes. And of course, this will include new packaged goods without unusual susceptibility to loss from breakage, pilferage, or the nature of the goods themselves. As far as declared value insurance is concerned, declaring value to a carrier is not the same as providing insurance protection for merchandise in transit. Sometimes, you know, you have got to declare the value to the airline or the shipping company if you want to have insurance on the goods from the airline or the shipper, for a ship owner, on the value of your goods. And in such cases, the freight would be charged not on the weight of the cargo, but on the value of the cargo. So this declaration is different. If there is a claim against a carrier, the shipper has to prove the merchandise was damaged and prove the carrier caused the damage. This makes recovering losses to be very difficult. If the merchandise is damaged in transit and the carrier did not cause the damage, the shipper would not be able to recover the loss, since the carriers have got limited liabilities as far as damage in itself is concerned. There is an insurance policy known as warehouse to warehouse insurance policy, where there is an agreement between the importers and exporters that the insurance policy should be on warehouse to warehouse basis. That means from the originating point of the seller to the destination point of the buyer. Most cargo insurance process goods in transit from the time they leave the shipper's warehouse until they reach the consignee's warehouse. As long as they are not taken out of the normal course of transit by the insured, they've got to stick to the course direction of the movement. However, there are certain circumstances when the terms of purchase or sale determine when insurance is in effect or when insurance may not go into effect until the goods are placed in the conveyance. Insurance may cease when goods are discharged from the conveyance or when the conveyance arrive at the port. This is as per the Rotterdam rules. In addition, insurance is not in effect if the goods do not travel via a common carrier. That means they are picked up or delivered by the shipper or the consignee themselves. They don't travel via a common carrier. Insurance policies are subject to condition that the shipment is through a common carrier. Apart from these types of insurances, there is a vicarious liability insurance. This is a secondary liability that arises under common law. That is the doctrine of agency. That basically means the responsibility of the superior for the acts of their subordinate. It basically means that I, as owner of a company, am responsible for all the acts of omission and commission of my employees. It can be distinguished from contributory liability, another form of secondary liability, which is rooted in the tort theory of enterprise liability. Of course, these are all high-level types of liability insurance where large organizations need this kind of insurance. There are many different types of insurance policies available, but liability insurance is one of the most popular because it costs less than many other options. Simplest definition is which protects a person or entity from claims initiated by another party. That's the simplest of definition. There is an employer's liability is also a type of vicarious liability. Employers are liable for negligent acts or omission by their employees in the course of employment. And for an act to be considered within the course of employment, it must either be authorized or be connected with an authorized act that it can be considered as a mode. Here, this means that the employee must be engaged in an authorized activity, duly authorized by the employer. If he indulges in activity which are not related to his employment, then it will not be covered. Employers are also liable under the common law principle, represented in the Latin phrase as qui facto per lium facit per se. That is, one who acts through another acts in his or his own interest. This is a parallel concept to vicarious liability and strict liability, in which one person is held liable in criminal law or tort for the act or omission of another. That means if you cause an accident, you become the liable person. As far as principles liability is concerned, it is a company. Why? Because a company will act only through its employees and agents. It is necessary to decide in which circumstances the law of agency or vicarious liability will apply. To hold the company liable in tort for the frauds of its directors or senior officers. If liability for particular tort requires a state of mind there to be liable, the directors or senior officer must have that state of mind, which is known as a criminal state of mind. Then company would not be liable. But if they have a state of mind as applicable only to the company, then it is attributed to the company. Director or officer is expressly authorized to make representations of a particular class on behalf of the company, and he fraudulently makes a representation of that class to a third party, causing loss to the company, will be liable. The extent of authority is a question of fact, and of course is significantly more than the fact of an employment which gave the employee opportunity to carry out the fraud. Mind you, these are all different types of liability insurance applicable for a very higher level of activity by companies and their directors and their employees, where the original owner of the company is indemnified. D&O liability is again director and officer's liability. Intent to cover all acts and omissions of the directors or officers or their position. Why? Because the company should not be held liable for any statement or action or failure by the or any other mistake by the officer or director. So, as a owner, you need a D&O liability insurance when you assemble a board of directors. Why? This is more because the investors of your company, especially those who give venture capitals, will also require that you show evidence of D&O liability insurance as part of the conditions of funding your company. They may say that your director can cause a loss, and you may turn around and say, I have not caused the loss. So that is why they may insist that you have a D&O liability insurance policy. Also, having various types of employees opens the management to employment practices, lawsuits, which can be covered under D&O insurance liability. Firstly, you need a D&O insurance because claims from stockholders, employees and clients will be made against the company and against the directors of the company. That means if the claim is made against the director of a company, then director himself should not be personally liable. And since a director can be held personally responsible for acts of the company, most directors and officers will demand a protection. They need to be protected rather than they put their personal assets at stake. They say if a third party can file a claim against me as being a director for some action being committed or mistake being committed, why should I settle the claim from my personal assets? And therefore, I should have a D&O liability insurance policy. Secondly, you need a D&O insurance because investors and members of your board of directors will not be willing to risk their personal asset to serve as a corporate director or officer. And normal employment practices suits constitute the single largest area of claim activity under this D&O type of policies. As far as professional liability is concerned, this is applicable to all professionals who give advice. Being a professional, you are required to give professional advice, and if your advice results in some loss, you as professional may be held liable and be asked to pay the claim. Malpractices, if they occur due to doctors, lawyers, architects, engineers, etc., they are all professionals. But if they say that, no, we are not responsible directly, then they should have a professional liability insurance. And the person who buys such a liability insurance is the insured person. He'll be covered for all professional ethical acts.